This podcast is brought to you by Underwriters Laboratory, Workplace Health and Safety.
So the first title we're going to release is more informational for organizations, and it's really designed to help educate the entire population related to the new view of safety. So we get into looking at how the best-in-class organizations are utilizing these techniques to drive improvement, but ultimately set up the rest of the content that will be coming online at the end of the first quarter. This first module will be available for free, and we'll announce soon when you're able to access that content as well as where. Thank you.
All of this cool stuff's available at Underwriters Laboratory, workplacehealthandsafety.com. Think about it, you guys. They're great sponsors, and thank you for doing that. And now, let's get on with the podcast. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I'm your host, Todd Conklin. Hey, today's kind of special. Every day's sort of special with you guys. I mean, what's not to love about the fastest growing safety podcast in the world? Because there's like two of them. No, that's probably more, actually. I bet there's like, I haven't really looked, but I know there's a couple more for sure. Like, I know about DisasterCast, which is great, and I got to get him on. He'd be fun to have on. And then there's a couple more, but our numbers are humongo, gigantic, if you will, and that's always sweet, and thank you for listening because it means a lot. As is going in my life, I don't know if we've talked much lately, but the whole goal to go slow, to sit back and smell the roses, to enjoy life, to savor it slowly, I think, quite honestly, I suck at that. It's just not something I'm good at. It's not my deal. I got a lot of deals. That's not my deal. That is not what I do. I don't know how to make it happen. So I'm not doing well, but I'm having a lot of fun, and it's been a great year. I'm so pleased and so happy, I think, with what's happening with the way people think about safety and reliability and performance, and I like how that's all changing. That's a huge part of what we do for each other. It's certainly a big part of why this community exists. It's to a great extent why you go to work every day, is to make sure people don't get killed or maimed and that our systems are as stable as they can possibly be. And this new view that we're dealing with, this safety two thing, it does so much for us. But one thing it does for us is it really allows us to ask the question, what did you fix? Because for so long, we saw discipline and compliance as a control. And I think it's just as obvious as the nose on your face that it's not a control. It's a response. It's definitely a reaction. But what's it fix? I mean, what did you fix? So I disciplined a guy for not following procedure. The next question ought to be, and what did you fix? Did you fix the guy? Because maybe, but I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of questions about that. Does the procedure even allow itself to be followed, right? And a million more. Did you fix the system? Well, no. Because you focused on the worker. Did you fix the workforce? No, because deterrence is a horrible way to manage safety. I mean, it's just a sucky. It doesn't work. I mean, so if you want to do stuff that doesn't work, knock yourself out. The problem is that you won't get better. And that's really where we want to be in this conversation. In fact, that's a huge part of what we want to talk about in this very conversation. And that's kind of what these safety moments are all about. So today's a special day. I told you that I kind of promised it to you. Because today, I want to take a little time with you, and I want to build a case around a discussion of error. And I know I'm from Western Kansas. I grew up in Kansas, which was a great place to grow up. I got no complaints. It's a little freaky now. Like, they have the worst government now that they could possibly have. It's crazy. But anyway, that's a whole different podcast. But when I say error, I think you might hear A-I-R. But I'm actually saying E-R-R-O-R. You'll have to translate for the rest of the podcast. I want to talk to you about this because I think it's actually a problem. And I think it's something that we ought to sort of pull the string on and have a discussion. So today's podcast is going to feature just a little discussion, a little lecture, if you will, on some, my thoughts at least around error, around mistakes, around human error. And I think you'll find it interesting. I hope you find it interesting. Please listen to it because my goal is to not change your mind. my goal is to not give you 10 tools to make errors go away. That's not my goal. My goal is I want to introduce a question in your thinking. Because if I can get you to ask better questions around human error, then actually everything else sort of takes care of itself. The rest of it's pretty easy. I just want to change the way you think about human error. You think about human error. And I want to challenge you. And you may disagree, and that's all right. That's why we have podcasts. In fact, I hope you disagree on a lot of these. Holy crap, you better be. But also, it causes you to sort of go to a different place in your conversation. And that's really where we want to be in the conversation. That's a huge part of what happened. So without any further ado, give me 20 minutes or so to sort of really hammer in and talk about human error. So here it is, my little discussion on error. Alrighty, let's talk about error, because we ought to talk about error because it's worth talking about. So when we talk about human error, I think there's a real arc to safety too. And that arc is that when you first are sort of introduced to these new ideas, like if you first go to a human performance class, there's a lot of discussion around the fact that people make mistakes, and they make them all the time. And that those mistakes sort of at the first part of this journey become really important to you. And in fact, one of the things that happens, I think, is this belief that if you identify all the mistakes and you simply identify tools to reduce the potential for these mistakes to be made, that in fact what happens is you actually create safety by reducing human error. And then you sort of play with that a while and you process it, and you really look at error reduction tools. You look at things like take twos or the STAR tool, stop, think, act, review. And those really are pretty robust tools. They're pretty good tools, and they cause workers to be more attentive. And when they're more attentive, they're less likely to make errors. So when they're paying more attention, they're less error prone. And you actually function at building a system, or at least in your mind, building a system that your goal is to actually take down the number of errors that happen in your facility. And that really is something you can chew on. And you can run with it, and you can actually take it places, and you can do things with that information. And it's super, super, super seductive. Dare I say it, it's kind of sexy. The problem is that it's still really pretty old school. It's still pretty linear, and it still is kind of saying, albeit a little different than you've said it before, that if the worker cared more, the worker would be safer. If we observed the worker more, and if the worker made less mistakes, then less accidents would happen and we would have a safer workplace and life would be better. And that becomes kind of a realization on this journey to safety too that happens somewhere, I don't know, I could put some time on it. For me, and I'm thinking of me and Cindy Wagner and Shane Bush and Bill Rigo sitting around in a thing called FCOG, which is the Energy Federal Contractors Operating Group. It was a group where we got together, sort of a peer community. And when we first introduced ourselves to the new view, we pretty much spun ourselves into some kind of operational frenzy where we said what we want to do is build in error tools. And one mistake that we make, and we certainly made it, and it's one you ought to think about as well, is that we roll out a class on 6 error tools. And we'll make everybody in the plant, everybody in the facility take that class, and we will say, our goal is to reduce your errors. And now when I say that to you, and I hope you're listening carefully, what I hear is, if you cared more, you'd be safer. This is still your problem. And we're still looking at the worker as a problem to be fixed. And so we sort of figure out eventually that this isn't going to work very well. And there we are. So then we introduce the idea of error-likely situations, error triggers, error traps, error-provoking situations. And we start talking about things like design, and we start looking really carefully at our systems. Hoorah! We're looking at our systems. We're looking away from the worker. And so now the worker's not the problem to be fixed. Now we're looking at our systems. And we start looking at things like human factors. How are tools designed? How are guards put on those tools? How do we write procedures? How do we create those procedures? And we start looking really for conflicts, operational conflicts, goal conflicts, ambiguities. I mean, all these things exist. And we start really focusing on improving our systems. And we think, aha, I got it. It's not about reducing human error. It's about reducing error-likely situations. And if we could just find every error-likely situation and make it more robust, fix it, if you will, then the world would be a safer place. And we would make a place where it's harder to make errors because we would design in safety. And we start doing that. And what's crazy is we start to get some real improvement. Now, we got some improvement with the error reduction tools. We definitely got some improvement when we ask workers to pay more attention and to be more careful and to make fewer errors. But that's probably pretty short-lived and relatively unsustainable because it's hard to remember to do the STAR tool every time you do a job, because you do the job a million times, which means you have to do the STAR tool a million times, and that gets a little boring. So we focus on these systems. And the systems help us get almost immediately better because we start to drive out things like error traps, error triggers, error-provoking environments, error-provoking situations, ambiguity, conflicts in procedures, conflicts in goals, conflicts in operations. We put guards on stuff so it's harder to get your hand cut. You know, we design control rooms so that there's a clear difference between on and off. The buttons just look different. We redesign things so they become really, really important. And we spend some money. I mean, because a lot of these design changes equal money. Now, the individual changes weren't expensive, but these are getting more expensive, and we've got it. It's a problem that's solved. This new view makes sense. I have it. The worker isn't the problem to be fixed anymore. The system is the problem, and we have to fix the system. And then we start thinking about it. And what we think about is the fact that, well, quite honestly, it's impossible to identify every error-likely condition, every error-provoking situation, every trap, every trigger. They're just impossible because work's much more adaptive. In fact, what happens is we start to understand at a deep level, and this is probably a year into your journey, maybe a little longer, but you start understanding that really hazards are movable. And that hazards aren't permanent. In fact, what hazards do is they ebb and flow in and out of our workplaces a million times. I mean, it's variability, and it's always there. The example I think of all the time is, could you write a procedure? Could you create a system? Could you actually create a rote compliance set of directions, a checklist, if you will, for all you Atal Gawande fans, for your trip to work, your commute to work that you make every single day? And the answer is you could. It'd be good. It'd be nice to have that procedure. The problem is that the procedure isn't followable because your commute to work is filled with variability. Every day's different. Every day's not the same. And what's really interesting to me is that that variability is super normal. It happens all the time. So here you go. Oh, crap. It's not about asking workers to not make mistakes. And it's not entirely about fixing our systems, although both of those things are very important and really gave us some pretty immediate and measurable progress. We got safer. We got better. But then you start realizing that the problem is mistakes. It's human error. And one of the things I want to tell you, and this is really important, is that if your program is focused entirely on error reduction, your program's probably not robust enough to actually take you to a place where ultimately you'll get to whatever it is you want as an outcome. I hope your outcome is the capacity for your organization to fail safely. I mean, that's what I hope your outcome is. But maybe your outcome is zero accidents or zero injuries. You know, that's a goal. It's an outcome. It's pretty hard to operationalize that. But nonetheless, probably some of you listening to this have that as your goal. And that changes the way we think about mistakes. So listen carefully to what I'm about to say, because I want to make a prediction. The prediction I want to make is that at some point during your journey to safety too, to the new view, to safety differently, at some point during your journey to understand performance and systems reliability, you will come up with a very, very important realization, and you'll come up with it on your own. I'm not going to force you into it. No, nobody can. But at some point, you're going to realize that human error is not terribly interesting, and it's never causal. In fact, every accident that ever happened happens because a worker screwed up. A worker made a mistake. And probably the worker wasn't following your procedure. That's pretty normal. In fact, I can't think of a case where that isn't a part of every single investigation I've ever done or looked at. And if it's always there when failure happens, then it's a part of sort of the failure fabric. But what's even more interesting is that every success you've ever had at your facility was filled with human errors and giant parts of the mission where you didn't follow the procedure because the procedure was not followable or not accurate or not specific enough, or a variability happened that was beyond your procedure's basis. If those things are true, and they are, then that really has to change the way we look at human error. Because error is so compelling, but it's so old school. It's the worker made a mistake. If we could get beyond that worker's mistake, then our world would be a safer, better place. And here's why this matters. If you think human error is a choice, then you're always left with fixing the worker's error. But if you think human error is normal, it's the beginning of the beginning of the discussion, not the end of the discussion, then it really becomes a starting place to understand how you can create a system that has more capacity in that system to actually move carefully. I know it's very compelling to go out and look at our organizations, look at our facilities, and focus on what goes wrong. But in fact, I think it's much more advantageous to look at our facilities and focus on what goes right. Because what goes right helps us understand how robust our systems are. Error is normal. Error is not very interesting. Error is not a choice. And that probably is the reason I'm driven to actually do this very special pre-accident investigation podcast with you. Is because when we see error as a bad choice the worker made, what it does is it gives us a cognitive bias, a confirmation bias almost, that sets us on a journey in our thinking towards fixing the error, not fixing the problem. This is really important, you guys, because everywhere I go and the companies I talk to, and they're great people and they're great companies, and they want to make a huge difference, and they want the world to be safe and stable, and they want their systems to perform as well as they possibly can. Everywhere I go, everything is kind of colored by this fundamental belief that a good worker became momentarily incompetent. And that moment of incompetence was a choice. How many times have you heard your boss say, you know, we don't blame people. We don't punish honest mistakes. The question has to be, do we punish dishonest mistakes? And how do we look at mistakes? Because in retrospect, after the consequences happened, every mistake looks like a choice. In fact, the worker zigged instead of zagged. Well, in context, when the accident is happening, that's sort of one of a almost infinite number of things that could have happened. And after the consequence happens, the likelihood of that consequence becomes one. It's 100%. But before the consequence happens, the likelihood that's about to happen is almost unimaginable. In fact, it would be very difficult for the worker to see the outcome that was about to happen, because if the worker would have seen it, the worker would have done something differently. Now, the reason I talk about this is because when we look at a worker and say, good guy, safety leader, 30 years experience, momentarily had a brain fart and cut his hand, what we're going to focus on is that momentary sort of incompetence that the worker suffered. And we're going to look at that somehow using retrospect as our lens as a choice. And it's simply not a choice. In fact, if you see error as a choice, then your corrective actions are almost entirely around fixing the worker's choices. If you see error as sort of the beginning point, a naturally occurring, normal human function that's not ever very interesting and never causal, then it becomes really the starting place for your discussion. In fact, one of the questions I would hope you would ask is, how could we create a system so brittle that when one worker makes one mistake, he turns right instead of turning left, he grabs valve 3 instead of valve 4, we could have the horrific consequences that happen. That's a really important way to think about it. And to get there, you just have to sit back and relax and think about the fact that mistakes, when they happen, are simply mistakes. They're unintentional deviations from an expected outcome. That's all they are. It's a mistake. It's not a choice. And in fact, the worker had nothing to do with making that mistake aside from the fact that they made it. That what happened is what the worker thought they were doing clearly was some kind of operational response. Not a choice, but a response to the stimulus, the thinking, the culture, the past history, the past experience, the environment, the context, and the capacity that your organization has to do the work you do. Now, when you start looking at error as something other than a choice, what happens is you start looking at error as a normal part of every single operation that you guys have. And you build systems that are more tolerant of error. In fact, one of the things I would share with you that's really frustrating to me is that I spend time with big companies and small companies, all of them good companies, who are diligently working to drive error out of their system, and they should do that. That's fine. The problem is what I really think we ought to be doing for fatalities and serious events and catastrophic operational failures is actually building error into our systems. The things we use commonly, the things that have had lots of time to develop, and systems that are really stable, are stable systems because they haven't driven operator error out. They've actually encompassed operator error in. An elevator in a tall building, it's really hard to operate that elevator wrong. It just is hard. In fact, it would be super hard for the operator to push a button and die. That'd be really difficult. In fact, the elevator is designed so robustly that it's designed to build in human error. Anybody with very little training and very little attention and many, many other things on their mind can still get to floor 7. That's a function not of great engineering, although great engineering happened. That's a function of us sort of saying error isn't important, it's normal. And because it's normal, we have to build it into the system to try to create a reliable performing action, right? An elevator rises to floor 7 that would be hard to do wrong and relatively easy to do right. All of that hinges on how you look at human error. And I told you it's a journey because I think it is a journey. You start with thinking if we could just get people to make fewer mistakes, we'd have less problems. And we build entire systems and programs around reducing human error, error-proof for the situation, right? And then when that doesn't work, you look at your systems and you start designing safety into the process. But eventually you're going to get to a place where error is just a normal part of how you do business. It happens all the time. It's not very interesting, and it's never causal. And if you start thinking that way, it changes the way you look at both failure and success. In failure, you really start your discussion by saying, where did the error happen, and how is this error possible to create the consequence we got? Right? That's a great question. And it force functions you into looking at and really understanding and creating corrective actions that make a system that's more predictive of the normal error and more prepared for the normal error. In prevention, in successful work, you start asking these questions. Where are we most brittle? Where are we one error away from a failure, uncontrolled release, or an operational catastrophic event, or almost anything? And you start saying, huh, that's where we need to put probably more capacity, more defenses or more controls, right? Those exist around there, actually not because people will make error, but in fact, for the reason that people make error. We don't want to drive error out. We want to build error in. And that notion is a really important notion. It's a huge part of what we want to talk about. In fact, I think about this all the time. Because if you look at really problems that we deal with in our workplace, and first and foremost ask ourselves, how is our organization posturing? How are we defining and understanding error in our conversations? Not what we say, because we probably say we're blame-free and just. Everybody says that now. It's very trendy. What we do is probably look at a place where a good worker becomes momentarily incompetent, and we take that and use that as causal, and we move forward from that place onto some kind of fix. Human error is normal. It happens all the time, and it's never causal. And if human error is normal and never causal, that's our challenge. How we look at it colors what we fix. And the one gift I want to give you, if it's time for you to take it, and timing's everything, is the understanding, the ability, and really the freedom to say to yourself, error's just there. It's not interesting, it's not important, and it's not causal. Let's start our thinking there. Let's not stop our thinking there. I think that'll be the most helpful thing I can give you, no matter what. That discussion is the discussion I want to have about human error. So that's the podcast for today. I hope you liked it. It was nothing more than just a chance to have a discussion with you and maybe introduce some ideas around this notion of how mistakes happen and how really ultimately unimportant mistakes are. Thanks for listening. As always, if you've got comments or questions or people that you think need to be on the podcast, please send me an email. I love your feedback, and I get quite a bit of it, so that's good. Subscribe, tell your friends. Always tell your friends. It's the community that we're building that actually makes the biggest difference. I hope you had fun. I mean, it's always kind of fun to do these. It's super fun to talk about them. This one's interesting, maybe a little bit tedious because it's only me, but I hope it gives you some fodder to think about. And if you're already there, then I hope it reinforces what you're thinking about as well. Until then, though, as always, learn something new every day. And I hope you did today. Have as much fun as you possibly can. And for goodness sakes, be safe.